Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 53 of the Crick Fix podcast. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at Def Mango on Twitter. With me, as always, is Estelle Vasudevan. You can find her at Estelle_Vasudev, the number one on Twitter. And then there's Jared Kimber, of course, as always. You can find him absolutely everywhere. A quick refresher for people who have forgotten what Crick Fix is or who have never been here before. What we do on the show is that we take any generic cricket category and we draft our top five each for that category via a snake style draft competition. So the pick order goes 1-2-3, 3-2-1. And it's a really, really interesting topic for this one, guys. I think Varun came up with it. Best cricketers, cricketers who were basically better than their numbers. And that's really interesting, isn't it? It's really vague and broad and subjective as well.
Yeah, there's no right answers here. Yeah. There's only wrong answers. So
yeah. So yeah,
good luck to us.
I also have first pick, by the way, for this one. And I don't know. I didn't put too much thought into this. We literally decided that we're going to be doing this like half an hour before the show. And my number one pick is going to be Freddie Flintoff. Anyone who watched him play knows that he was magic. When things were coming along well for him, he was box office absolute theater. I was 11 years old when I witnessed the 2005 Ashes, and then I was 15 years old when I witnessed the 2009 Ashes, both in England. Freddie Flintoff was the hero. He was like Ashes Jesus, honestly, at that point. And if you look at his numbers, you know, in Test cricket, he's averaging 31.77 with the bat. 32.78 with the ball, so a negative average differential. And in ODIs, it's an average, a batting average of 32 and a bowling average of 24.38. I suppose the bowling average is quite good in ODIs. But yeah, T20 cricket never could crack it, Freddie, which was so weird to me because it seemed like he was built for the format. Look, people might look at these numbers and say that hey, that's a good cricketer. Why are you saying he was better than the numbers? Because he was better than those numbers. I feel like he had a much higher ceiling. And maybe if he had, I don't know, been a bit more disciplined or worked harder or injuries, you know, lots of injuries in Freddie's career. So maybe a few of those injuries hadn't happened, he would have ended up with a better record. So yeah, he's my first pick.
He also, I think he just bowled the wrong length. I think if he comes back now, he bowls a better length and has a better career. I know it sounds weird that like, but that is where I would start with him. If he had just bowled the right length over and over again, because him and Chris Martin, all I ever remember them is beating the bat like a million times in that same era, where it's just like, at what stage are you just going to pitch it up and get an edge? And they never did. And it wasn't what cricketers in the world, around the world, before Ryan Harris, we really didn't have, and other than, you know, conventional swing bowlers, we really didn't have anyone doing that. Anyway, that's quite high. Estelle?
Yeah, so I will go with Aravindra De Silva just because we just did a piece on him. And I think in Sri Lanka, it's widely kind of accepted that this guy was much, much better than his record suggests. He has 6,000-something runs at 43 in Test cricket, but is still considered by a lot of great cricketers in Sri Lanka to be the best batter to come out of Sri Lanka. I mean, Jared can probably talk a bit more about, you know, what it was like watching him during those, you know, his early days and the type of talent that he displayed. For us, the biggest memory is obviously the World Cup final. So we didn't see those early years where he was like this mercurial kind of guy in a weak team. But definitely the numbers, you know, when you say great and you look at his numbers, I know even people now, and even on our video, there were people commenting that, you know, Kumar Sangakkara is by far the better player because he's got better numbers, right? But it's one of those things that's debated a lot in Sri Lanka about Aravindra's talent versus what he achieved.
I mean, Sangha and Mahela admit that he was a better player than them. So that's their thinking. And
everyone, like Sanat, Arjuna, everyone you speak to will say it's Aravindra.
And I was 2 in 96.
I think he had a higher peak. Yeah, I think he had a higher peak than them. I don't know if he was a better batter because they could get motivated every single day and he couldn't. But the truth is that when Aravindra was on, I just Mahela and Kumar, I don't think they ever got to the levels that he got to. And, you know, watching him in that 96 World Cup specifically was incredible. Watching him play in Australia when he had almost no batting support. And, of course, that incredible New Zealand series, which New Zealand just are still going on and on about, you know, 25 years later. He's definitely someone who is, there's just no doubt that he was a much better player than his numbers suggest. It's not even a conversation.
It's quite a safe pick. And I mean, everyone who I know, you know, in my family and whatever, because I was 2 in 96, I missed, you know, the glory days of Aravinda De Silva. They were mesmerized. They loved him over here in Pakistan. He was such a fan favorite. And, you know, sure, Sri Lanka and Pakistan are quite close when it comes to cricketing ties. But like when I say fan following, I mean proper fan following. Like, even when you guys came out with this video, so many people who I know in Pakistan were retweeting it, just praising Aravinda. So there's that.
I think it's the same in India as well, right? After that 96 World Cup. And I think even people from England, a lot of them still talk about that county stint that he had and how much
runs
he got. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's just so many stories of that. Great. No, that's a good pick. I'm going to go WG Grace.
Okay, because according to you, for that era, those numbers are outstanding. So I'm really confused here.
It was, but he was outstanding in Test cricket. But ever since, everyone, I still, every time I talk about WG Grace, the first 20 comments are, how can you say he's good when he's got a Test average in the low 30s? Right? And it's really important that we put this into context, that actually his numbers were fantastic. And that... he was a great player, and by the time he played, he was well. Why does he play Test cricket? He was well and truly past his best, and he still was dominant. So no, I still think people misunderstand batting averages, and Aravinda and WG Grace are perfect examples. Aravinda played in a tough batting era. Kumar played in the best batting era ever, and had, you know, a system behind him. And Aravinda didn't have any of that. WG Grace was like, he starts playing Test cricket when he's a doctor. Like literally when he opens his he stops basically being a professional cricketer the way we think about it in those days at that point. I think that's he's better than his numbers. I'm pretty safe to say he's a better player than someone who averaged in the 30s. Like I Abhishek Mukherjee said you could make a very good claim for WG Grace to be the best batter of all time ahead of Bradman. I don't think because of his average, very, very few people who think that anymore.
But also, right. If everyone was averaging in the 20s when he was batting, then that average of 33 is quite high.
Yes, but he goes on to play in the 1890s when people start to average more than him.
Oh,
but that's
okay.
Because he was in his 40s.
Fair enough. Also, so he played all of this amateur cricket as well, so he wasn't really motivated to play Test cricket.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't even his main format. No, I mean, he was getting paid a lot more money to play random games than yeah. there. Now, and I'm going to go Graham Gooch. There's my next player. So I think Graham Gooch is a perfect example of a player who probably just develops his full game later on. Mm-hmm. And his overall average is not that impressive. And we tried to with him and Aravinda, the amount of times that like for our book, we tried to like gerrymander it to put it into a point of like, oh, but if you look at this, and it's like, there's no way of looking at Graham Gooch without going, he has a very disappointing batting average, but he might be one of the greatest players of all time over the age of 30. And
true.
Specifically, not only is he great over the age of 30, he is great against the West Indies, right? Mm-hmm. Like he plays a lot of incredible innings against a West Indies that clearly no one else was playing very well against. So I just think there's a lot of things that go in his favor when we start to look at it from that point of view. So I'm going to have Graham Gooch on my list.
Very interesting one, that one, because a lot of people would think that he fulfilled his talent, but clearly you feel that he should have averaged higher with the bat. We've got, what, three and four picks?
Yeah, that is interesting. Yeah, there are English people who think he's in the top five batters of all time, and there are other people who would be like, why are you even talking about Graham Gooch? You didn't average 40.
Yeah, okay. I suppose the people in the comments will let us know how they feel about your picks, Jared.
Okay, me, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm going to go with someone who I picked in our previous recording as well. And I will preface this by saying that he does not have a bad record, but I feel like he could have been a much, much better bowler. So Mohammad Amir, I think we can all agree that he didn't fulfill his potential. He could have been one of the best ever in the game, but didn't really reach those standards because of, you know, stuff that he himself brought on himself. Still has a decent enough record. I mean, averaging 13 tests with 119 wickets, 29 in ODIs and 21 in T20s. But I feel like particularly the ODI and test records would have been much better if he had firstly not missed those 5 years for the fixing and then, you know, had a consistent run where he was, you know, at his peak.
But wouldn't you say that if you round everything off, he's averaging, what, roughly 28 across formats?
You know,
maybe
I feel
like averaged like 25 at best.
I think you're looking at this very differently than we, the way me and Estelle are, because you're looking at players who had lots of potential, but maybe didn't do all that much. And we're looking at players who are actually better than their numbers. Mm. So Mohamed Amir, if he played throughout his peak, would have ended up with a far better record than what he has ended up with. So I just think you've looked at it from a different point.
Yeah. I'm glad that we've had this conversation right now, because Freddie still saves me and now I can recalibrate.
No, I'm not saying you're doing it wrong, because who knows how other people look at it. But the question is, cricketers who are better than their numbers, right? Mohamed Amir, we all know, could have had a much better career than he ended up having. So I think that's completely following the system there. A test happens when you're asleep. Where do you find the best match report? A cricketer's backstory is meticulously crafted by a great writer, but it's a day you're not on social media, and so you miss out. We all do this. It becomes almost a full-time job to follow the sport you love, but there is a solution. The emailer Best of Cricket can tell you what the main stories are and the best articles every single day. And when they can't find them, they even write their own. Now, instead of trudging through Twitter or Blue Sky, you can just wait for the Best of Cricket to email or WhatsApp the greatest cricket stories straight to you. Subscribe to Best of Cricket today.
All right, so both of your picks are done then?
I had one pick. I'm
Oh, you're in the middle. You're in the middle and you've gone from Mohamed Amir. Okay, so that means that I have two picks.
You have two.
And Jared, you're going to love this one. For my second pick, I'm going to go with the Baron, Larry Constantine. Right? Of course, we've recently recorded a Footmarks on him as well. And this is someone who literally on and off the field was one of the biggest stars for the West Indies or anyone to come out of the Caribbean in that era, you know, and was a part of the team that defeated England for the first time. And he was someone who was pretty much, you know, if you can compare him to someone in the modern day, it would be Andre Russell, based on what I've read from Jared's work, is that he was an electric fielder, he was a very quick bowler, and he could absolutely smash it. Belligerent batter, right? Which basically he displayed in that game versus Middlesex, once the West Indian side was touring England, and Middlesex had set that side a target of 250. Constantine came out to bat at 7, with a lot of that, like more than half of that score remaining, and he batted for an hour, scored a ton. Exactly an hour, scored a ton, and then that team won, the West Indies touring team. But if you look at his overall record, right, I'm trying to find it, and I just cannot land on that page for some reason. But yeah, Baron Constantine. So he basically also cleared the bar, became a high commissioner in the UK for Trinidad and Tobago, and was a big statesman sort of character. But his numbers in Test cricket are very, very substandard. 18 tests, 635 runs with the bat, averaging below 20, 19.24. And with the ball, he's gotten 58 wickets in those 18 games, and his average is 30.10. Compare that to his first-class average, and that's 20.48. So he's averaging 10 more runs per dismissal in Test cricket. And with the bat, he's also averaging 5 less runs per innings in Test cricket. And I mean, I am probably someone who, you know, maybe 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, through Jared, kind of discovered Larry Constantine, and I haven't watched him play. But I don't know, maybe it's recency bias, maybe because I've done a Footmarks on him recently that I've gone for him.
Recency bias on a player from the 1930s is quite cool, isn't it? It's interesting. You've gone with two players who are all-rounders, who had impacts on games and who disappeared from games, right? And they don't have overall great numbers. But he should definitely be on this list. I think that's a very good call.
All right. So second pick, I'm confused between two players. And they're very similar in very many ways. Just quite not sure where to go with this one. So I'm going to yap on till I decide who I'm going to go with. And yeah, you know what? Let's just go with Moeen Ali. Someone who was plug and chug for pretty much the entirety of his career. Didn't have a fixed batting position, didn't have a fixed role, was always kind of filling gaps for England. And if you look at his record, like, people in the future will open his cricket info page and say that he sucks. And you know, they won't entirely be wrong, because he's averaging 28 with the bat in Test cricket, 24 with the bat in ODIs, and 21 with the bat in T20s, right? But, you know, with the ball, he wasn't a bowler to begin with. And I feel, if anything, he might have overachieved as a bowler, right? But the averages are bad. Test cricket, it's 37. ODI cricket, it's nearly 48. And even in T20s, he's averaging 27 and economy is 8.31. All things considered, I think Moeen Ali was a better cricketer than that. Sure, they used him a certain way that his numbers don't really stack up, but his impact was immense. He would provide impeccable balance to that English team. And he's a World Cup winner, you know, T20s and ODI cricket. So I feel like, you know, whoever hasn't seen Moeen play, because he was so beautiful to watch, Pat, right? Like, so stylish, silky smooth. I feel like those numbers don't do him justice. So that's why I've gone for him. How would you guys view Moeen Ali?
Yeah, I mean, he is a player who's probably better than their numbers. I think the way I always look at it is, as an all-rounder, you're either a legend or a loser. I've always called this the Botham Pringle continuum, where it's like Pringle wasn't a bad cricketer, right? But, you know, there's no middle ground. We don't have all-rounders who are good cricketers who we just think about as good cricketers. We either think of them as greats or failures. Mm-hmm. So the whole Shane Watson thing, if you go back to Shane Watson's career, you'd be looking at it and go, wait a minute, he seems okay. Why is everyone hating on him? And you could go through them for heaps. There's heaps of players like that, right? Moeen Ali is, I think, after Shane Watson, maybe the poster child for that kind of cricketer.
Okay, so I'm not feeling too bad then. Two picks are done, and now it's back to
me,
you, isn't it? Oh, Estelle, I'm completely fucking up the order in my head. Anyway, it's you, Estelle.
Okay, this is my third pick, right? I go with Carl Hooper.
All right.
Oh, okay.
Good one.
Who I think he didn't perform badly, but if you look at his record, like he's got an average of 36 in Test cricket, 35 in ODI cricket. I think the ODI numbers are okay, but Test cricket he was definitely a better batter than that, wasn't he, Jared? I mean, I feel like he's playing with Brian Lara most of his career, but the way he batted, he did seem like a much, much better batter than that. Could, of course, bowl a bit as well. But just as a batter, I feel like he definitely underachieved.
No, there's no doubt. I mean, he was just better than his record. It's a bit like Aravinda De Silva. Mm. Like, when he decided to bat, he was absolutely remarkable, but he did not always decide to bat. So what do you do with a player like that? I just think I think he was a fantastic player, and it's the same with his bowling. His bowling doesn't. I don't remember his bowling as ever being bad, and yet he averages what, 45 or 50 with the ball. So it's like he probably never got the most out of himself. So I think he's a good pick here.
Yeah, definitely a better batter than someone who averages 36 in Test cricket. Mm. So it holds.
Yep. I'm going to go with Daryl Cullinan next.
Okay.
So I think Daryl Cullinan is a 50 average test batter.
All right.
And I think what happened to Daryl Cullinan was Shane Warne. And he never got to work it out. And he was dismissed so quickly that he almost never had a chance to work it out in a way that probably now, maybe it would work more in modern times. But I think Daryl Cullinan was an actual top level player who played in an incredibly tough era. When we looked at his match factor ratio and his era factor ratio, he was the player who was depressed the most of the good batters in the world. And then you throw on top of that, he could not pick Shane Warne, right? And one particular delivery really that he couldn't pick from Shane Warne. I think he was a much better player than that, all things considered. And we just didn't quite see the best of him. So yeah, I'm going to go with Daryl Cullinan next. And then I'm going to go with Daniel Vettori.
Oh, you've stolen my pick. I was confused between Dan Vettori and Moeen Ali. I didn't really know where to go.
Yeah, I think, I don't think Moeen Ali's a bad pick, but I think Vettori probably should be slightly higher on this.
Yeah.
He had to bowl in New Zealand for like a long period of time when everything was against his kind of bowler. And I think he did well. I've got no problems with the way that he bowled during that period. So, I'm going to go with him there. I think he probably got the most out of his batting, but the bowling is just like quite clearly he was bowled to death. And he was probably picked, 5 years before he should have been, just because they didn't have another spinner. I'm going for Vettori there.
I mean, he's someone who averages 30 with the bat in tests, which I feel is quite good for his role. But, people will look at that test record and say, oh, he's averaging 34.36, and they won't care about the 362 wickets anymore, which is why it kind of throws you off. And even in ODIs, like, he's got 300 plus wickets, but the average is over 31. So people from, you know, 20 years from now will not know how important he was for New Zealand. He was like,
I think
a
people
mainstay.
Already talk about it, right? Like, he doesn't really get into the conversation of best spinners.
Well, that's also because, Estelle, I haven't seen him running through batting orders, but he's always in with a consistent performance. You'll barely ever see Vittori with a bad game. Yeah. That's the thing with him, right?
I was going to say, he just didn't bowl bad balls. They were, I mean, he's probably not as good a bowler as Nathan Lyon, but Nathan Lyon ain't averaging 30 with a bat, right? And Nathan Lyon wasn't ever going to be Australian captain either. Like, he's a considerably better player than someone like Nathan Lyon. And we talk up Nathan Lyon and we've forgotten about Vittori already.
Yeah. Absolutely. So interesting picks. Cullinan, I thought, I mean, I haven't watched him in his prime, right? But if you look at his record, it kind of checks out. 44 with the bat, the average in tests, and then what, 33 in ODIs? But it's interesting because we all know the Shane Warne story.
Yeah.
Estelle, I think you're up next.
Again, like, funny about Cullinan, because I remember South Africa was a really good side during that period. And the Cullinan Warne thing was like, everybody knew about it, right? Quite funny.
It's even in the documentary, right? There's a good 20 minutes on it in Shane Warne's documentary, if I can recall.
It was a huge issue at a time when global news about matchups wasn't a thing.
Yeah. Okay, Estelle.
Okay.
Don't steal another one of my picks, please.
Okay. I don't know if this will be like a hot take, but I'm going with Mark Waugh.
Okay.
I feel like if you know, the conversations between the about the two brothers were always that, like, Mark Waugh is the more talented one, the more stylish one, obviously look much better with the bat, right? But his record is like 41 average in tests is not bad. 39 in ODI is again not bad. But I feel like his ceiling was much higher and he kind of didn't quite reach those levels with the bat. I think there's a theme with my picks, Aravind the Carl Hooper, Mark Waugh, kind of similar.
You basically
type
picked
of
the same player
three times. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think that's another good call. Mark Waugh was a genius with the bat. And to end up averaging low 40s is kind of a bit silly with how good he was. It really was. I just think he was such a great player.
Yeah.
And part of the problem, well, the reason he doesn't average high, which is slightly different maybe perhaps than the other two, is he would get to 100 and that was it. I don't think he ever went past 150 odd. Did he even get a 150? I'm trying to remember what his top score was. It's one of the low, 153, there you go. It's a really low top score for a player of his level. Right? Especially for someone who's made many runs with him. He also then, like Aravinda, and probably like Carl Hooper, and like Daryl Cullinan, they all missed out on the good batting era that came next. So all of their averages are a little bit depressed because they played in an era where no one averaged particularly high, right? And then straight afterwards, it's like everyone averaged ridiculously high. So I think Mark Waugh is very fair. Also, if you want to factor in his ODI cricket, he's underrated as an ODI player when, you know, he wasn't destructive in the way that Gilchrist and Sanjay Jayasuriya was, but he was money in the bank. Like, you knew he was going to make runs so consistently and he didn't do them slowly.
No, that is an interesting pick. I actually didn't have him in my list, but it does. Like, the rationale checks out. I agree that, you know, he is a worthy pick. And now I am confused between two Englishmen once again.
That's okay, because you've got two picks.
Yeah, so but I'm not gonna pick both of them because I know my last pick, and that might surprise you guys, but hey, I mean, I have to mention that dude. Okay, so you've probably guessed, Jared, which two English batters I'm confused between. So hopefully you'll just pick up the other one, I'm assuming. I'll go Mark Ramprakash for pick number four. Jared and I were podding once, or maybe talking off camera, and he mentioned to me how when he moved to Surrey, or close to Surrey, or wherever he lives, what was it? Lewisham, or close to Lewisham.
The Oval. I moved to the Oval.
He moved to the Oval, and he would go and watch Surrey play, and Mark Ramprakash was, you know, or had him completely mesmerized. He would look, watch him bat, and he would think that he's the best batter he's ever seen. And I'm literally quoting Jared Kimber over here. And you look at the first class average, right? He's played 461 games. He has 114 tons. He's averaging 53.14. Translate that to test cricket and it's a complete mismatch. 52 games, 27.32 is his average. He's got 2 tons. I don't know what went wrong over there, but something clearly did, because that is one of the biggest mismatches that I've ever seen, at least.
Yeah. No, I think that's a very, very fair one. I think something just didn't happen. Maybe it was the situation that he was put into. Hmm. Maybe it was Ramps's. Matt Ramps is a really intense dude. You know, I've been lucky enough to work with him as a an analyst briefly, although the team that we both ran never started. I really like Ramps, but he's an intense person, and clearly something happened with him, and it just didn't come over the way that it should have. There is no doubt in my mind that he's one of the best batters I have ever seen live. For his control over things. Can I tell you a great one? I think I might have put this in the book. A great one, which is Ramps realized that bowlers basically gave up in the over before tee, right? Because they were like, well, the batter's not going to play any shots. They're just going to play for tee. So I'm just going to put the ball in the right area or whatever. And Ramps would go out of his way to like really focus in on the over before tee and try and hit a couple of boundaries. And when someone asked him, he's like, yeah, it's like I get like 10 or 12 free runs every time just before a lunch or a tea break. And it's like, it's not at all the way that you think about things like that. Like he was really thinking about batting on a completely different level. Unfortunately, we just never saw that in Test cricket.
Yeah, even in ODIs, I mean, if you look at his list A average, it's 40.22 and his ODI average is less than 27. So something clearly didn't work out for Mark Ramprakash in international cricket. I'm not picking the other Englishman. So hopefully he will be snapped up later, although he does deserve to be on this list, I suppose. And also, I don't want 4 out of 5 picks to be English. There's a bit of that as well. This pick might surprise you guys. I'm going with Imran Nazir. Someone who was a live wire, both with the bat and in the field. If you witnessed him play, you'd be like, oh, this is definitely Pakistan's answer to Chris Gayle. And he was batting in an era where he really could have capitalized on that. And he missed out on, you know, the peak period of T20 cricket. And this is a guy who, you know, is averaging 32.84 in 8 test matches. He played 79 ODIs only to average less than 25. And then in T20s, he's averaging 21.73 in 25 games. His strike rate for that era is great, 135. But again, if you watched Imran Nazir play, you'd think at least someone who can average 35 with the bat in the longer formats. And in T20 cricket, it seemed like, you know, or it felt like at least at the time when the format was introduced, that he should be playing every game for Pakistan. Mm. Look at his numbers in the ICL or some of the highlights in the ICL. He was the best batter in that, I don't know, dodgy league. So, yeah, that's kind of why I had to make room for him, because I felt like he really was better than those numbers suggest.
No, I think he could have been a star, but we definitely never saw that.
Yeah. Okay. Now it's
last pick.
Estelle again?
Yeah. Okay. I've got a few choices, but I think I will go with Yuvraj Singh as my last pick.
Really?
Yeah, I feel like, look, he was kind of touted to be like the next big thing, right? He did achieve a lot, but I feel like his numbers don't reflect how good and how talented he was, particularly in the limited overs game, right? He's averaging 36 in ODIs and 28 in T20s, striking at 87 in ODIs, which is quite decent, and 136 in T20s. But I feel like the numbers, like in terms of runs that he got, don't really reflect how good and how talented he was. Even with the ball, I feel like he could have had better numbers. He was not a bad left arm spinner, right? He could be that guy who gave you a few handy overs. So that would be my last pick.
This is brought to you by Cricket 8. They are a new player in the game trying to educate fans on what is really happening in cricket. We have a partnership with them where we host live watch-alongs, do podcasts and write articles. If you want to know what is really happening with our game, visit cricket8.com. Very, I think that's a good pick. He averages 34 in Test cricket. Like, this is not a player who should have averaged 34 in Test cricket. And he averaged 34 in Test cricket in a period in which everyone was making runs.
Yeah, true.
Really ordinary players are averaging over 40 in that period.
And he's batting lower,
averages 34.
Right? He's not batting the top four.
No, I think that's a really good choice. So no, I'm more than happy with that. I'm going to finish off with a real historical pick. I'm going to go with Clem Hill.
All right.
So Clem Hill is probably the first great left-hander, and I had an incredible strike rate, but because he's playing in the same era of Victor Trumper, just no one talks about him. I think he was probably an ugly batter, is my guess, from the fact that he wasn't talked up That would be my guess. But he makes 3,400 runs, an average of 39, and he is just not mentioned when we talk about great batting at all, right? Like, I don't mean he's not mentioned by, like, people like us or people like you guys are in you know, who focus on cricket in the last 20 or 30 years. I mean, historians overlook Clem Hill. And he was an absolute incredible player. You know, the prototype left-hander player that would just get runs anywhere. You couldn't keep him off, couldn't keep him on strike for very long. I think he was a fantastic player. So yeah, Clem Hill for me is my last player. And again, averaging just under 40, it's the wrong side of that number. Even though we know those are good numbers for that era, you don't get remembered in the other eras if you end up with numbers like that. Or, you know, the same. I would say he probably was a better player in his era than Aravinda was, than Mark Waugh was, than Carl Hooper, than Darryl Cullinan was, right? And yet, no one ever mentions his name. And that's because when you end up with an average that low, that's how these things go. So, yeah, I'm going Clem Hill. Should we go through? Have you guys got any more? I had Ishant Sharma, Zahir Khan, Vinu Mankad, John Reid, and I had Nathan Lyon as well.
Oh, KL Rahul. So KL was high on my list. I really thought Graham Hick would get picked, honestly, because I was so tempted to go Ram Prakash and Hick. But then I was like, no.
You went in a completely different area. Look at yours. You've basically got all-rounders who don't have good numbers but were handy, right? And then you've gone major disappointments.
Yeah.
Whereas look at Estelle. Estelle's gone an injured guy and four players who were really, really talented who didn't end up with good averages. And I've gone players who are not remembered as good as they are because their numbers don't pop in modern cricket. So all three of us have gone from that from a completely different way. And so you could come up with 100 more. Have you got Graham Hick is a very good one. Yeah. Adrian Barath is another one that I always think about.
Perhaps even Aidan Markram, even though that career is ongoing. Yeah. He was on my long list.
I'm surprised we didn't mention Ben Stokes, actually. Like, I mean, he doesn't have great numbers, does he? Another one Ashraful. Mohammad Ashraful was supposed to be the next best Asian batter or whatever, right?
I was tempted to go Junaid Khan as well, but I picked him in the previous one. So I was like, this time it's Imran Nazir's turn. Those are the only two ones that kind of stuck out for me in a Pakistan perspective. Astle's a good one, right?
Stephen Fleming's probably a good one if Nathan Astle's a good one, by the way.
Yeah,
Stephen Fleming, Stephen Fleming is like Mark Waugh, except his problem was getting to the 100. If he gets to
Martin
100...
Because Martin Crowe is thought of as one of the best ever batters to play the sport, and his numbers aren't up there with the best.
Yeah, so I think Martin Crowe, I actually thought about having Javed Miandad on the list too, but I don't think he's actually underrated. But I do think that there's a couple of batters in the 80s who were great. But again, because the numbers are depressed, people don't see them as great. So yeah, I think Martin Crowe was certainly another one that I kind of thought about on that kind of list as well. So Bayram went Freddie Flintoff, Leary Constantine, Moeen Ali, Mark Rankhash, and Imran Nazir. Estelle went Aravinda De Silva, Muhammad Amir, Carl Hooper, Mark Waugh, and Yuvraj Singh. See that when Estelle picks a Sri Lankan early on, if it's the right decision, she got no flack for it. And I've gone WG Grace, Graham Gooch, Darryl Cullen, and Dan Vittori, and Clem Hill.
It's an interesting one. Very, very subjective. And all of us, as you can see, approach this particular list in a different manner. And you might think of it in a different way. So let us know who we missed out on, what you have picked and all of that stuff. And also who wins this, because we always care about that. But anyway, that does wrap up this episode of Crick Picks. So just a quick reminder for all of you guys, you can go to goodareas.co and bookmark that webpage. And that can prove to be your one-stop shop for all the work that we do as part of this team, whether it be written content, podcasts or videos. We'll be back next week with another episode of Crick Picks, but that is all for now, folks. You guys have a good one, and that's goodbye from us.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes.
Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bahram Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.